Osho, My Way, The Way of the White Clouds. Discourse number 11, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
When we're sitting in front of you and hearing your words and feeling your presence, everything feels possible. But when we return to our daily living conditions, things do not seem so clear and we feel cut off from it. You've told us that we should not renounce the world but be meditative within it. You've also said that we should be spontaneous and mad. How can we integrate the two without alienating our families and friends and the society around us?
Once you start thinking in terms of two contradictions and how to make them meet, you will be always in difficulty. Everything will be then a compromise. And with compromise, no one feels ever fulfilled. Something is always lacking, missing. If you do this, then on the other pole, something has to be lost. If you do that, then on this pole, something has to be lost. And whatsoever you lose goes on hovering on the mind. It will never allow you to be blissful. So the first thing is, never think in terms of compromise. But if you think in terms of contradictions and how to make them meet, you are bound to think in terms of compromise. So what I am to suggest to you, the first thing is, always be integrated within and don't think of any integration without. Because you are the meeting point. Alone, you sit silently. In life, you have to be active, involved. Silence and involvement are contradictions, but they both meet in you. You are silent and you are involved. If you are integrated, your silence and your involvement will be integrated. Your being alone and your being with your wife or your husband or friends are two things, contradictory. But you are in both. If you are integrated, alone you will be happy. If you are integrated with others, you will be happy. Happiness will be your quality. It doesn't depend on being alone or on being with others. If it depends, then there will be problems. If you feel when you are alone you are happy, and your happiness depends on being alone, then there will be difficulty. Then aloneness is a must. Then when with others, you will feel unhappy. And then you will start thinking how to make these two opposites meet. The problem arises because you are dependent on your loneliness for your happiness. Don't be dependent. Be happy when alone. Let happiness be your quality. And when you move from aloneness into involvement, into communication, relationship, carry that quality of happiness which was in loneliness. Carry that. In the beginning it will be difficult because you will almost always forget. because of forgetfulness, because of not constant awareness, but by and by you can carry the quality. When living with somebody, you can still be as alone as you were in your loneliness. You remain an integrated soul. While not doing anything, you feel happy, at ease. This at-easeness should become a quality of you, not of inactivity. Carry this quality in activity, and there will be no problem. In the beginning, there is going to be difficulty. But the point is to remember that your happiness, your bliss, your ecstasy should not be dependent on any condition without. If it is, then there is contradiction. Because as you live now, it is always dependent. People feel that they are happy when they are with their friends. Then when they are lonely, they are bored, miserable. Somebody is needed. These people are extroverts, a type. The other type is the introvert. Whenever he is alone, he feels happy. Whenever he moves with someone, unhappiness enters. Both are in bondage of their types. Type is a bondage. You should be free of the type. You should neither be extrovert nor introvert, or both. In both the cases, you are free of the type. So, what is to be done? Never get fixed with a situation. Always move to the opposite and carry the quality. And move as much as possible from this opposite to another and carry the quality. Soon you will become aware that the quality can be carried anywhere. Then you cannot be sent to hell. Because even if you are sent, you will carry your happiness there. Then you will never be afraid. Religious people are afraid of hell. And they are seeking and hankering the heaven. These people are not religious at all, because heaven and hell both are conditions out, without. They are not your qualities. These are the worldly people. That's what worldly people are doing. They say, if this condition is fulfilled, then I will be happy. So happiness depends on the condition. A palace is there, then I will be happy. So much money in the bank balance, then I will be happy. Such a beautiful wife, then I will be happy. Such a good, loving husband, then I will be happy. You are happy only when something else is fulfilled outside. And you say, if this is not fulfilled, I am unhappy. This is what an unreligious man is. And the so-called religious men also go on seeking the heaven, avoiding the hell. They are doing the same. For you, this is going to be the sadhana, the discipline. Move in opposites as much as possible and try to carry your inner integrity. Sit in silence. Feel what is the inner quality. Then go into activity. With that quality being retained inside. It will be lost many times, don't be worried. But even once you can carry it into the opposite pole, you have become master of it. Then you know the knack of it. Then sometimes move to the hills, they are beautiful. Then come back to the world, that too is beautiful. If hills are beautiful, why not persons? They are also hills in their own right. Sometimes be alone, sometimes be with others. And if you are alert, and if you are alert, that not only there will be no contradiction, there will be a help coming from the opposite. If you can carry the quality of happiness from loneliness to society, suddenly you will become aware of a new phenomenon, a new happening within you, that the society helps you to be alone, and that aloneness helps you to be deeply related with persons. A man who has never lived in loneliness cannot know the beauty of relationship, cannot know, I say, because he has never been alone, he has never been a person. How can he know the beauty of relationship? And a person who has never lived in society cannot know the ecstasy of loneliness. A person who is born in a lonely place, is brought up in a lonely place, you think he will be ecstatic. You think he will enjoy the loneliness. He will simply go dull and stupid. Go to the hills, go to the Himalayas. People are living there. They have lived there for thousands of years. They are born there. But as much as you feel the beauty of Himalayas, they can't feel. As much as you enjoy the silence there, they cannot enjoy. They are not even aware that the silence exists. When they come to the cities, they feel a thrill, the same thrill as you feel when you go to the hills. People living in Bombay, London and New York, they feel the thrill when they go to the Himalayas. People living in the Himalayas, when they can come to Bombay, New York or London, then they feel what beautiful the world is. The opposite is needed to feel. It becomes a contrast. The day is beautiful because there is night. And life has such joy because there is death. And love becomes an inner dance because there is hate. Love leads you to a high peak of consciousness because love can be lost. It is nothing that you can rely on. This moment it is there and the next moment it is not. The possibility of its absence gives depth to its presence. Silence becomes more silent. When in the background there is noise, the aeroplane passed just few moments before, you can look at it in two ways. If you are a disturbed man inside, you will feel it as a disturbance of the silence. If you are integrated within, the noise of the aeroplane will deepen the silence here. It becomes a background. It gives shape, form to the silence. It gives a sharpness. The silence when the plane has passed is more than it was before. It depends on you. Always remember, don't get dependent on things, situations, conditions. Then you can move. And don't avoid movement, otherwise you will get fixed. And everybody is afraid of the movement because you are dependent. You cannot come out of your hills, your solitariness, to the world of the market, because you know you will be disturbed. What type of silence is this which can be disturbed by the market? What value it carries, of what worth it is? If the market can disturb, if the world, the humdrum world, can disturb, then your silence is very important. If it is really potent, if you have attained it, nothing can disturb. With silence, it is not very difficult what I am saying to understand it. But that is my attitude in every sphere of life. If you are a real brahmachari, a real celibate, you can move into sex. And it will not disturb. This will be very difficult to follow. If it is disturbs it, it was nothing worth. You carry the quality within. If you are really alive, full of energy, you can die happily. Only weaklings die unhappily because they have never lived. They have never tasted the cup of life. They have always been hoping, and it never happened to them. That's why they are scared of death. One who has lived is always ready to die. One who has really lived is every moment ready to accept death. The word accept is not good. It will be better if we call to welcome death, to receive it happily, joyfully. Then death is an adventure. It should be, if you have really lived, then death is not the enemy, death is the friend. A deeper life allows death. A shallow life avoids it. And this is so in every sphere of life. If you have known what friendship is, you will not be scared of enemies. You will not be. Then enmity has its own beauty. It is a sort of friendship on the opposite poles. It is a love affair on the opposite poles. It is involvement, it is commitment. If you have known friendship, you will love the enemy. And that's what Jesus means when he says, love your enemies. Not what Christians have been interpreting all these centuries. You cannot love your enemy. How you can love your enemy? But I say to you, if you have loved friends, you will love your enemies. Because once you know the beauty of friendship, you also come to know the beauty of enmity. It is a friendship in reverse order. And both give, both enrich your life. Opposites are not really opposites. Deep down they have a great harmony. They are parts of one whole. What Chinese say, yin and yang, They are part of one movement, part of one wheel. They are not two. They appear two because we have not looked deep down. It is because of our shallow eyes, non-penetrating mind, just superficial consciousness. That's why they look opposites. Otherwise, they are not. Life and death are friends. They exist through each other. They contribute to the other. Without the other, they will not be there at all. Can life exist without death? Man has been dreaming forever and ever how to destroy death. And this is the attitude of the mind, linear mind, logical mind. How to destroy that? Because logical mind says if there is no death, life will be in abundance. Simple logic. Even a child can understand the arithmetic. If there is no death, there will be more life. But I say to you, if there is no death, there will be no life. That's why simple logic is always fallacious. Apparently, it looks so right that if there is no enemy, the whole world will be your friend. You are wrong. If there is no enemy, there will be no possibility of friendship. The logic says if there is no hatred, love and love and more love will be there. So logicians have been trying to destroy the opposite. They cannot destroy because life is greater than any logic. And this is fortunate that they cannot destroy the opposite. They don't know what they are doing. If the opposite is not there, then don't go on believing that life will be more, love will be more, friendship will be more, happiness will be more. No, there will be no possibility because the very ground has been destroyed. Dialectics says something else, quite the contrary. And dialectics is truer to life. Dialectics says if you want more life, then be more ready for death. And you may not be alert, but this happens. When you are driving a car and you get more and more speed, you get involved in the speed, and a moment comes when any moment death can happen. Then you are alive. Then the flame of life burns fast, sharp. That's why speed is so attractive and magnetic. Because speed brings you nearer death. When you are nearer death, life is more. It grows in proportion. That's why so much attraction for war. Because in war, death is at close quarters, always near you. You may be thinking that soldiers fighting in the field must be very miserable. You are wrong. Otherwise, no one will fight. They are not miserable. The real thing is quite the opposite. When they come back to the ordinary world, they are miserable. When they are on the field, fighting in front, they are not miserable. All misery disappears. They are so near death that they feel for the first time alive. And their aliveness becomes more and more the nearer the death comes. When all around there is bombardment, and cells are passing from here to there. And any moment they can drop dead. At that moment they feel ecstasy. They are in touch, deepest touch with life. When death kisses you, it is also a kiss of life. That's why so much attraction for adventure, courage. If you are afraid, you will not gain life. And I tell you that meditation is the greatest courage and the greatest adventure. Because even in a war field, you are not so near death. Even if you feel you are near death, it is only physical death. Physical death means a superficial death of the cell, of the body. Your house is near death, not you. Your shelter is going to be destroyed, not you. But in meditation, you are going to be destroyed. Not only the shelter, but the host. Not only the house, but the host. The ego is to be destroyed. So greatest warriors are always interested in meditation. I would like to tell you one incident that has happened in India, that has happened in Japan, and that will happen to any country which gives birth to warriors. All the great meditators in India were Kshatriyas, warriors, not Brahmins. This looks strange. Brahmins should be the great meditators. They have been writing commentaries on Upanishads, Gita, Vedas. They have been creating metaphysics, and they are the great metaphysicians the world has ever known. Nobody, nowhere in the world can compare Brahmins as far as verbal expression is concerned, logic is concerned. They are very subtle, but they are not the great meditators. Great meditator is a Buddha, he is a Kshatri, a warrior. Great meditator is Mahavir, he is a Kshatri, a warrior, not a Brahmin. All the 24 Tirthankaras of Jains are warriors. This seems to be strange. Why? In Japan, where samurais have existed, warriors, great warriors the world has ever known, samurai is just the peak, the ultimate possibility of being a warrior. In every moment, the samurai is ready to die. For such tribal things he is ready to die, you cannot imagine. I have heard about one historical fact. 300 years before, one samurai, one great warrior, was too much drunk. And suddenly he was called by the king for some purpose. So he went there. He tried to be alert, but he was too much drunk. So he forgot some tribal mannerism, that how you have to bow to the king, how much. He bowed, of course, but it was not as exact as it should have been. The next morning, when he became sober, he immediately killed himself. Harakiri is the word you must have heard. Harakiri belongs to samurais, warriors. The moment they feel something has gone on, just ordinary mannerism, and the king has not said anything. And the warrior was so great that the king would not have mentioned it at all. But he killed himself. The next day, when the king became aware that the warrior has killed himself, he wept. The warrior has 300 disciples. They immediately killed themselves. Because if a master has committed a wrong, the disciples should follow. And you will be surprised, it seems unbelievable that for 100 years, continuously it continued, this small thing. More disciples, and disciples' disciples. Because once a master, and it is never heard a samurai going to the king drunk and doing something wrong. For tribal things, death seems so easy and at hand. These samurais created Zen, the greatest dhyana tradition in the world. These samurais meditated deeply. This is my feeling, that unless you are ready to die, you cannot be ready to meditate. War and meditation are synonymous in a deep sense. Wherever there is possibility of your being restored, in that moment your flame of life burns in its totality. The full intensity comes to you. Opposites are already meeting. You need not try for any meeting, any synthesis of them. They are already meeting. They are in a deep harmony. You are not in a harmony. That is the problem. So when you are healthy and you feel a well-being, carry that well-being when you are unhealthy and ill. And I tell you that the feeling of well-being is not dependent on health. The feeling of well-being is an inner feeling. It is not dependent on the body. You can carry it even while ill. Ramana Maharishi was dying. He had cancer, throat cancer, and it was almost impossible to talk, almost impossible to eat and eat anything. But all those who surrounded him on his last, they were surprised. He was so happy. His eyes were filled with a subtle well-being. The condition of the body was just a ruin. The whole body was a ruin. But not Rama. He was as healthy as ever. Once his master was dying. He was very old, almost 100 years. Disciples were there. They couldn't weep because he was laughing. They couldn't cry because it looked so absurd. The man was so happy, so bubbling with happiness, just like a child, enjoying his last breath. They could weep only when he was dead. And somebody asked, when he was alive, why you were not weeping? They said, it looks so absurd. looking at his face, looking at his eyes, it appears as if he is going to a higher realm of being, as if death is just a door to the divine, as if he is not going to die, rather being reborn. And he was not an old man. If you looked in his eyes, he was a child. His body was old. The well-being can be carried. Even when you are seriously ill, you can remain in the inner well-being. You know the other thing. Even when perfectly healthy, you remain in the non-well-being. You know it, so the other can be possible. Perfectly healthy and you are miserable. Perfectly young and alive and as if on your dying bed, somehow carrying the whole business of life, a burden, a dead weight on the heart. You are alive because you cannot do anything else. What you can do? You are alive, you have found yourself alive, so you carry it. But life is not an ecstatic phenomenon. You are not joyful about it, not celebrating it. Such a great blessing to be alive. Even for a single moment to be alive and aware, is too much. And a long life is given, and many lives. You are not thankful, because unless you celebrate, how can you feel any gratitude, any thankfulness? Perfectly young, alive, but inside you carry the misery. Dying, a man who knows will carry the well-being. A laughter will be coming from his inside, very inside, from the very core of his being. Don't try to synthesize the opposite poles of life. Just be integrated. And when I say just be integrated, I mean whatsoever you feel in loneliness, carry into the marketplace. Whatsoever you feel in your meditation, carry it into love. Because in the love, the other will be present. In meditation, you are alone. And sooner or later, things will settle on their own accord. You need not settle them. You simply settle yourself, get settled yourself, and things will fall into their own arrangement. They always fall. They always follow you. Once you are settled, the whole world is settled. Once you are in harmony, the whole world is in harmony. Once the inner accord is reached, there is no discord in the world. My emphasis, total emphasis, absolute emphasis is you get settled. Don't try to find any harmony in the opposites. You can never find. And if you try too much, you will get more and more disturbed. Because it is impossible. And another thing also you have asked, that while with me, you feel well-being. You feel a silence. You feel everything is possible. That too can become a dependence. Then not with me, things seem to be more impossible. Things seem to be not so in accord. You are confused. While with me, you feel silence because you are less. While with me, sitting with me, for moments you become egoless. for periods. You are not there. You are simply with me. The barrier is broken. The wall has disappeared. In that moment, I am flowing in you. Everything seems possible. Back, gone away from me, you gather your walls again. You are there. Things are not so beautiful then. So just try to understand what is happening and carry that when you go away from me. What is happening? When everything seems possible, even the final enlightenment seems possible, what is happening? You are not there. Without you, everything is possible. With you, everything is impossible. You are the problem. Listening to me, you forget. If you forget, you are not there. Because your being there, the ego, is just a mental phenomena. You have to create it every moment. It is just like pedaling a bicycle. You have to go on pedaling it. If you stop for a single moment, the cycle stops. There is a momentum, a little momentum, the cycle will go a few yards and then will stop. If you want the cycle to continue, you have to go on pedaling. It is a continuous process. The cycle moving is not something permanent. It has to be created every moment. The ego has to be pedaled every moment. And you are pedaling it. When you are here, the pedaling stops. You are more concerned with me. Your total focus and attention moves. It is just like a small boy cycling. And he is curious about everything. And he looks at the tree and hundreds of parrots chattering there. And he falls from the cycle because the attention has moved. He stops pedaling. He forgets that he is on the cycle and he has to continue it. Small children find it difficult in the beginning to cycle, just for one reason, because they are so curious about everything. And no country allows driving license for children, only because they are so curious. They will forget. Any moment their total attention can go anywhere. And they will forget that they are driving, that they are having a dangerous tool in their hands and others' lives are in danger. They are unfocused. Their consciousness flowing everywhere. While you are here, you are so much concerned with me, so much involved in it, you forget the pedaling. And for certain moments, when you forget yourself completely, silence descends on you. A bliss arises. Everything seems possible. You become divine, that's why everything seems possible. Only for a God, everything is possible. For a God, nothing is impossible. In that moment, you become God-like. Away from me, you are returning back. Your mind starts thinking, you start pedaling, and you pedal more because you have to compensate. You have not pedaled your cycle for a few moments, so you pedal more just to compensate. Intense ego comes back. You lose contact with yourself. With me, really, what is happening is you are in more contact with yourself. The ego is not there. You are in deep contact with yourself. Your inner source is available to you, flowing. There is no block in energy. All the blocks come back, old habits return, and then things don't seem so good. And then the whole phenomena of being with me seems like a dream. You cannot believe it. It looks like a miracle. And you think that I may have done something. I have not been done. I have not been doing anything. Nobody can do anything to you. It happened because you allowed it. When you move away, carry this feeling. Whatsoever you are feeling here, carry it. Then I will be needed less and less. Otherwise, I can become a drug. Then every morning, you are awake and you start hankering for me. And then you are getting ready to come to me. A deep urge, then I can become a drug. And then you will become more and more dependent on me. That's not the way to reach Satori, Samadhi, or enlightenment. That's not the way. If you become dependent on me, I am a drug and I am destructive then. But this is you who can convert me into a drug. Whatsoever you feel near me, in my presence, with me, carry it with you. You must come to a point when, whether with me or without me, you remain the same. Then I am a help. Then I am not a bondage. Then I am a freedom to you. And I must become a freedom to you. And when I say must become a freedom to you, it means you must come to a point when you are freed from me also. If it is a constant dependence, and you are not freed, it is not helping, it is simply postponing things. A real master will always make his disciples free of him. That is the goal. Come to me, go away from me, but carry the feeling with you. You remain the same. Move in the polar opposites, always remaining the same. Then everything is possible. Because you are the source of all the energies. You have the source of whole life within you. All that is happening in life is happening from the same source from which you have happened. You are related to it. You are one with it. If birds can be so happy and singing, you can be, because the same source supplies them the happiness, the singing. The same source is available to you somehow. You have created some blocks. If the trees are so green, so at home, not worried, you can also be the same, because the sap that comes to the trees is coming to you. You may have forgotten it, but it is there. All that has happened in life, all that is happening all around you, all this mysterious, is your heritage. Claim it. It is wasting unclean just by your side. And you go on begging. And the empire is there. And the empire goes on wasting and waiting. And you go on begging. Claim it. And this is the way how it can be claimed. Remain the same while moving into opposites. This is what Krishna in Gita says, in pain or pleasure, be the same. In success or failure, remain the same. Whatsoever happens, let it happen, you remain the same. This sameness will give you integrity. One thing more you have asked, that I said to you to live in the world, not to renounce it. And yet be completely mad and ecstatic. Seems difficult, because then how can you live normally in a world, in relationship with people? Yes, I'll say this to you. One thing, renouncing the world is ugly to me. Because that means renouncing the gift that God has given to you. You have not created life. You are not there because of your choice. It is a gift. Renouncing it is going against God. All renunciation is against God. It is saying no. That's why those who renounce become more egoists. The moment you renounce, you say, I am wiser than life. I am wiser than the divine source from where everything comes. When you renounce, you say, I choose. When you renounce, you use your will. And will creates ego. When I say don't renounce, I'm saying don't be a will. Don't be a chooser. Whatsoever is happening is not happening because of you. So who you are to choose this or that? Let it happen. Then what you can do? Let it happen. Don't be disturbed by it. Renunciation is just an escape. Because you get hurt, because you get disturbed, you renounce. You renounce the situation. You don't renounce the attitude that gets hurt. You don't renounce the heart that is with so many wounds that anybody can hurt it. You don't renounce the mind which is ill, which is always ready to get disturbed. You renounce the world, which is easier. You escape to the Himalayas, but all that was within you will be with you. It will not make any difference. This is a deception. Remain integrated, remain silent, remain happy, and allow the world to happen, who you are to renounce or not renounce. Wherever you found you have found yourself, wherever you find yourself, be there. Be integrated and silent and happy. Don't go to the Himalayas. Create a Himalaya within. That's what I mean when I say don't renounce. Don't go to the hills. Create that silence within. So wherever you move, hills move with you. And relationship is beautiful because it is a mirror. But there are stupid people. They see their face in the mirror and they see it is ugly, they destroy the mirror. The logic is apparent. This mirror is making them ugly. So destroy the mirror and then you are beautiful. Relationship is mirror. Whenever you are related with a person, a wife, a husband, a friend, a lover, an enemy, a mirror is there. The wife mirrors the husband. You can see yourself there, and if you see an ugly husband, don't try to leave the wife. The ugliness is in you. Drop that ugliness. This mirror is beautiful and be thankful to this mirror. But stupid and coward people always escape and renounce. Brave and wise always live in relationship and use it as a mirror. Living with someone is a constant mirroring around you. Every moment the other reveals you, exposes you. And the closer the relationship, the more the mirror is clear. Distant the relationship, the mirror is not so clear. That's why all renouncement becomes really the renunciation of love. Wife and husband, that becomes the base. How to break that relationship? Because 24 hours living with a person in the same house, 24 hours being related, even when a wife is not talking, not saying anything to the husband, she is mirroring. Even when the husband is just reading his newspaper, he is mirroring. The way he is putting his newspaper, the wife knows that the newspaper is just creating a wall. He is hiding behind it. He may be pretending to himself that he is reading. He may be reading the same news twice, thrice. He may be not reading at all, just going through the words mechanically. But the way he is hiding himself behind the newspaper becomes a mirror. He is avoiding the wife. He is fed up with the wife. He doesn't want her to be here. He doesn't want her to be looked, to be seen. The presence, the very presence is heavy. He wants to escape somehow. When you are in love, language is not needed. Gestures, even silence becomes eloquent. A constant mirroring goes on, and everybody is ugly. Because beauty is something which happens only by and by when your inner being becomes revealed. Ego is always ugly. So only when the ego is not, one becomes beautiful. And the ego is mirrored. And whosoever continuously reminds you that you are ugly becomes the enemy. You want to renounce. But is it wise to renounce the mirror? It is foolish. Even if nobody mirrors you, you will remain the same. You may even grow more in the same direction when nobody reminds you. The mirror is beautiful and good. It helps you. And if you are alert, you can by and by drop the ego, and then in the mirror of the other, your beautiful self will be revealed. Once you are a nothingness, a white cloud, then all the lakes of the world will reveal your whiteness. Then all the lakes of the world will reveal your floating, let go. So I say, there is only one thing to be renounced, and that is renunciation, nothing else. Live where? God are the whole. If you don't like the word God, there is no problem. It is only a word. So God are the whole. Wherever you find the whole has placed you, be there. And the whole never places anybody into renunciation. Never. The whole always throws you into relationship, because nobody is born alone. Nobody can be. At least the mother, the father will be needed. A society, a family will be needed. The whole always throws you into relationship. That's why I say it is going against God. Gurdjieff has many insights. One of his insights is that all religious people are against God. This is just strange, but this is true, and I fully approve him. He is right. All religious people are against God, because they put themselves to be as judges. This is wrong, that is right, and this should be done, that should not be done, and one should move away from the world. God throws you in the world, and so-called religious preachers, they teach you to renounce it. I am not that kind of a religious man. I am with God, with the whole. Wherever it leads you, move like a cloud. Move with him. And give yourself totally to the whole. The only thing to remember is, in the opposites, the silence, the equilibrium, the balance, the integrity. But you say, it will be difficult. Yes, it will be difficult. If you are ecstatic, it will be difficult in a family which is pathological. And every family is pathological. It will be living, just if you are forced to live in a madhouse, it will be difficult. Because everybody will be mad there. So what you can do in a madhouse if you are thrown? You are not mad. Everybody is mad. What you will do? If you are really not mad, you will act madly. That's the only wise way there. So nobody comes to know that you are sane, because if they come to him, they will create trouble. A really wise man in a madhouse will act more madly than any madman can do. And that is the only safe state there. So in this life where everybody is mad, this whole earth planet is a madhouse, a big madhouse. Everybody is pathological, ill, diseased, abnormal. What you can do? Act with people when you feel. Don't try to create unnecessary trouble. Just act and enjoy the act. That is with people, acting. And for yourself, be madly ecstatic. what I mean somebody has died in the neighborhood. What you will do? Be madly ecstatic there? Then you will be beaten. Weep and cry. Act beautifully, because that is what is needed in that whole pathological situation where death is not accepted, where death is the evil. Don't create any trouble for anybody. If you are wise, act, and act so beautifully that nobody can cry like you. There. Enjoy it. That is your inner thing. Make it an ecstasy. But for the ouch, for people who are around you, act it beautifully. Be an actor in the world. When you are an actor, you are not disturbed. Because then you know this is just an acting. The whole life is a great psychodrama. Be an actor there. And inside, remain in your non-egoistic blissfulness. Enough?